This episode is brought to you by Tending to You. Tending to You provides mobile bartenders and waitstaff for private events in the greater Houston area. Learn more at tendingtoyou.com. That's tending, the number two, and the letter U.com.
This week on Meet and Three, we bring you stories about how Gen Z is different from their millennial predecessors through the lens of food.
My knowledge of alcohol didn't really come from like Bud Light commercials or like Project X.
Yeah, and that's my gripe with the platform as well, is that all these DIY videos, cooking videos, they're 20 seconds.
What's one food item from your childhood that you wish you could have today?
Dunkaroos, because they don't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. Although, the Dunkaroos Twitter was activated again a year ago, so it's only a matter of time. They've tweeted a couple times. It's pretty hype.
Listen to Meat and Three, HRN's food news and storytelling roundup, wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, hello. Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and it is Wednesday, August 5th, 2020. This is the 260th episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talent in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is a wonderful chef and restaurateur who has his hands in many exciting projects, and I will introduce him fully in a moment. First, as I do in every show, I will start out with my PR tip, and then later we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to accept new challenges. Be willing to try something new, and perhaps even something that you're typically afraid of, pushing yourself beyond your own comfort zone. Why, you may ask? Well, when we face our fears and overcome them, the reward is priceless. There's simply nothing like a victory for you, yourself. So when presented with a challenge, accept it and say yes, believing that what you'll find on the other side will be very worth it. That's my tip today. Now, I'm very excited to have my guest joining me. It is Akhtar Nawab. He is the chef and owner of Alta Calidad in Brooklyn, Otra Vez in New Orleans, and Prather's on the Alley in DC. He's also the founding partner and CEO of Hospitality HQ, a creative consulting and management group which offers bespoke solutions for culinary-driven concepts across the country. Akhtar is also a contributing chef at Cook Unity's Creators Club and the author of his first book, Good For You, Bold Flavors with Benefits, with Chronicle Books, and that's going to be released this month. So hi, Akhtar, welcome to the show.
Hi, it's been forever. I'm glad that we can catch up finally.
I know, and I was thinking about the last time I saw you, and was it when we were in Atlanta? We ran into each other at the Food and Wine Festival?
I know, it was that long ago. It was a couple of years ago, I think.
I know, that's crazy. Well, this is a great excuse to catch up and hear everything you're up to. And I can't believe everything you're up to, actually.
Yeah, we're doing a lot.
Seriously, busy. So before we dive into what the current projects you're working on, can you take us back a little bit to maybe just growing up and what initially interested you into getting into the hospitality industry and becoming a chef?
Sure. I mean, as you know, it's not that easy, I guess, with me, because I was born in, you know, family from India. My mom and dad are both from India. My brother was born there as well. And I was born in Milwaukee and then raised in, raised in Louisville, Kentucky. And I stayed there for, I would say, till I was about 18, then left, or 17, then left for college and went away to Bradley University for a year, and then returned to to Louisville and I started cooking there. So I was about I was 20. And I was cooking in Louisville, Kentucky, and I kind of, I don't know, it wasn't like a, it was a family-oriented restaurant that was very busy. And I guess I really kind of got energized by working with a team and a group of people for, you know, a common goal that I guess I hadn't really ever had that before, because, you know, I wasn't very motivated by schoolwork and kind of those studies. And that was definitely difficult for my family, particularly my father, who really, really anticipated I would end up either practicing business more formally, I should say, than I do now, or a doctor or something along that line. And I really just couldn't see myself doing that. And when I got involved in cooking, I really found something I think that I was missing and filled a gap for me, for sure. Creatively, mentally, and then also, you know, kind of in my soul, I felt good doing it. But that said, it was difficult. You know, I chose a path and a course that isn't really scripted in any way. As you know, you deal with a lot of chefs, but there's no real kind of roadmap in a way. It's just you try to end up where you need to be. You envision yourself in a certain place, but it certainly is very difficult to get there. And I think that that's really the journey, you know, that I've been on for the last, you know, now 25 years about.
Yeah. Well, what led you to New York? And I know you worked with Tom Colicchio. You're at Gramercy Tavern, Craft Bar, and Craft.
I was working in San Francisco. I went to culinary school there. I met Loretta Keller, who is, you know, would end up being my mentor if I had to choose one, and also a very good friend. And I wanted to get to New York. You know, San Francisco had definitely what I was looking for when I got there, and it kind of was in the moment. Or the later side of its kind of moment with Alice Waters and that cooking. And I really benefited from working at Bizou at the time with Loretta, because she has so much of that same experience that I was looking for. And then when it kind of ran its course, I guess, I looked in New York, and Loretta said, you need to go check out Gramercy Tavern. It's really amazing what they're doing. And I flew out there. And I checked it out, and I was just kind of astonished that there was a restaurant that was kind of this big, this busy. But at the same time, I don't know that I've ever seen kind of that personality that Tom Colicchio could kind of put on each of his plates and his dishes. And it was really remarkable to me to see how it translated from that chef to the plate. And the cooking and the cooks and the techniques and the way it all flowed. And it was really just remarkable. I'd never seen that before. And so I actually didn't end up trailing anywhere else. I just went there and I asked him for a job, and he said, call me when you get in town, you know, like, come back when you get in town. And I think he gets approached by so many people all the time. He just said, come back when you get in town. I got back in town. I got an apartment. I didn't have a job, but, you know, I kind of moved out here right away. And then I showed up and I said, I'm here. I'm looking for a job, you know. And it kind of all went from there. And I just kind of stuck with it. And I was approaching 2.5 years, and he was opening Kraft, and I wanted to do it very badly. So he offered me a position at Kraft as kind of a junior sous chef to Marco. And I was very young at the time, and you know, was under Benno, under Marco, and that was great for me. And I was exactly where I wanted to be. You know, ever since then, you know, I guess I've had other opportunities, but I was very content working at Kraft and then at Kraft Bar for, you know, 5 years.
Well, and in your longer bio, I know, Craft received 3 stars from the New York Times while you were there and won a James Beard Award for Best New Restaurant. So
it did. No, it did. That was very exciting. Like, it was a very exciting time to be a part of all that and to see.
Yeah, I mean,
everyone was kind of like, we were all so excited to be at work every day back then. And it was nice and it was very pure and it was just fueled by cooking great food. And obviously there's a camaraderie that kind of comes along with that and having, you know, Karen Damasco and Damon Wise and Marco and Benno and Dave Chang and all these guys who were working there and all these people that were there. And it was just really exciting and I hadn't had that before. So.
Yeah. And then you went on to have some other projects in New York with the EU and Eletteria, which I remember dining at. And how did this, I mean, and La Esquina, like how did you, what grabbed you about Mexican cuisine? Because I know, you now are primarily, that's what you're primarily cooking.
So I left Craft Bar to start focusing on raising money and opening my own place as kind of, we were all young chefs were kind of taught to do. You work for someone great and then you take all you can and you go raise money and you either have it internally, family, or you raise it. And we raised, you know, a little bit of money. We opened Eletteria at a terrible time. But at the same time, it wasn't the right time for me either. Like I didn't have the business knowledge you needed to have. Or anyone needs to have to open their own place to be able to afford to make mistakes. You know, we operate even now really without a very big safety net. You know, we've definitely created, when I mean a safety net, I mean a huge backer. You know, like fortunately we've been very, I would say, successful in what we're doing. So we've definitely carved a place out for ourselves. But we operate very mindfully even now. But at the time, Eletteria was everything I wanted to cook, but it just wasn't right. You know, I got a lot of I made so many mistakes in there. And after it closed, and I was kind of facing that same thing you've probably seen with a lot of chefs, where you close the restaurant, but you don't really close just the restaurant. You also kind of lose your identity in the process, because as culinary professionals or as chefs or as, you know, creative people, you know, we're often perceived by what people think of us as, which is our restaurants or our food, and not really as the person that we are. And even I kind of didn't know that, who I was really. I knew what I was working for, and I knew that I was working toward being better and whatever kind of accolades, goals, things like that were out there, but it wasn't really focusing on the right things, I think. And when I closed the restaurant, I really, you know, I was very depressed. I was in a terrible spot. And when I wanted to go back to cooking, I said I would do anything other than going back and cooking this refined, ambitious kind of...
Yeah.
Cooking. And I was like, I will do anything besides that. And it didn't matter what. I was open to anything. And Mexican, through like a headhunter actually, approached me and asked me if I would be interested. And I said, I don't know anything about this food other than I like it. And they were looking for a manager. As you know, like they had a clientele and they were busy, but they didn't have any sort of management in the back of the house, and that's really what they were seeking. And I told this guy James, and I said, James, I hate to interview like this, but I got to be honest, I don't know anything about this food. And he's like, you know what, if you're interested, you'll learn. And he was right. He was right about that. And I kind of went into it with a very humble kind of position, which is I didn't even know as much about the food as the cooks who were there. I didn't know more than they did. And I just got very comfortable working with this new set of ingredients over the course of 4 years. And then I really started feeling passionate toward it. And now I really miss it. I crave it if I don't get it often. So it was really kind of an organic thing that occurred. And I guess I've always been kind of cognitive of exactly that.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing because you've gone on to open Alta Calidad and Otra Vez and, you know, cooking Mexican cuisine. And I miss your cooking. I have to say, I want to come out to Brooklyn. What's just to jump ahead a little bit, I mean, with your experience opening your own place, when did you open in Brooklyn, and then how's it been, up until we hit into COVID and then the changes you've been going through? I know that's a lot.
Yeah, no, it's a lot. No, it is. But, you know, to answer the first part, you know, we opened in 2016, and it was mostly because, you know, I had some other kind of consulting projects I was working on, but they were kind of tapering off at the same time, and I wasn't really interested in pursuing them any longer anyway. And this friend of mine, Michael, came to me and said, I found this really great spot in Brooklyn, and it's pretty small, and the rent is totally reasonable. And I went and saw it, and it's on this great corner. It used to be a very good ramen shop called Chuco for many years, and they were super successful, and they moved down the street. And when we took it over, a lot of it was because I knew I could control everything I needed to. And, you know, I was still very tender, to be honest, about opening a restaurant of this kind of caliber. Again, I know, I think I'll always be a little timid after kind of getting so beaten up over the first closure, and remembering so clearly where that put me emotionally and financially afterwards.
Yeah.
And mentally too, you know. And I was very cautious not to revisit it. So, you know, since then I've developed a very, very close relationship with my daughter, and I didn't want to jeopardize that no matter what, because I knew how much it took to build that to what it is now. And there's no quicker way to ruin it than to be absent, you know. So I was very, very, you know, I was highly aware of what I was doing. And I went to her and I asked her, I said, Ella, do you mind if I open this place? You know, like, I kind of feel like I want to cook a little more freely again. And she said she didn't mind. And that was enough for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then to the second part you were asking about, you know, we didn't open that restaurant with any intention other than cooking good food. And it was interesting that, like, you know, we picked up a couple of Michelin nods, and those were not ever even never crossed my mind. Like, it never, ever, we were never shooting for reviews or anything. I just wanted to go there and cook the creative things that were on my mind at the time. And hopefully people would like it and they would go there. And, you know, that's worked out well, I think, for us so far. So,
yeah. So COVID comes along and no one's expecting this pandemic. How have you been dealing? How did you, as the word everyone's using, pivot? How did you pivot? Right. Where are you now? You know, how's it going?
We obviously, you know, we just like everybody, we're kind of standing there one day when we got this news about closures, and we're just all standing in the restaurant. We're like, kind of like, oh my God, what are we gonna do? Like, this is crazy. And I guess we felt the right thing to do was to close. And then, you know, like everyone, we packed up a bunch of things and went home and stayed there, closed the restaurant. And then when we felt a little more comfortable, as much as we can right now, we reopened for just kind of takeout and delivery, and we shifted our model to a little more kind of family style dinner type things that we would offer on certain days, a couple of large format things, and then the things that people really wanted from us, which were tacos and a few other dishes. And you know, we built a pretty big deck outside that can accommodate, you know, probably with our patio and the deck accommodate as many as we would seat inside right now. But fortunately, we were just approved for some outdoor city street dining for kind of hopefully the remainder of the summer and September, hopefully. It would actually give us a fair shot at making enough money to maybe, I guess, make it through the next round of closures, which seem inevitable right now, so.
Yeah, no, it's so hard. It's so hard. And then when we have a storm like we did yesterday, it's like, it's so hard with this.
It's been a lot, yeah. I mean, listen, we're pretty confident, as everyone is. You know, I listened to Dave Chang this morning as well. And, you know, the next round of closures, I think, it's inevitable. It's only so long before it's too cold for people to eat outside. And then what happens, you know? So obviously no one knows. There are no answers.
Yeah. But so you got involved with this, the Creators Club by Cook Unity. Do you want to talk a little about that? I was on your platform, and it's very, very user-friendly, I have to say.
Yeah, no, they're good, those guys. I like those guys. So Lonnie Sweet, who is someone I do a lot of work with.
He's been on my show. I know Lonnie.
Yeah, okay. I figured, and I thought so.
Yeah.
Lonnie's a great guy, and we're trying to find as much work as we can together, because I like working together. And he makes me laugh, and that's difficult. Most people can't do that. And we were talking about different revenue streams, and he presented this, and I said, you know what, that's really interesting. I would be totally into the idea of doing this, because I can do a lot of it centered around the cookbook that's coming out, and a lot of the dishes that we're doing there are things that are either in or derived from the cookbook. And it gave me a good platform to do it, and after I met the owner, he seems very committed to his concept and his idea. And he approached me by doing it, and it's been going very well. It's a couple of weeks of kind of figuring our way, but they were very supportive in the process. And ever since then, we've been putting up good numbers. So it's been a good added kind of revenue stream during this down period. And, you know, we're doing a lot more of that kind of stuff in general as we are going through this.
Yeah, I think that's great. The food options available with all the chefs involved, including yourself. I mean, it looks like I want to order. I mean, it's very well done, I think, without having tried it, but it's gotten tempted me to try it. So,
right. Well, I think you should. I mean, I know you like to eat healthfully.
Yeah.
I know it, and I think the things we're doing are really delicious, and they're kind of designed for just popping it in the microwave or warming it gently in the oven, whatever you prefer. And just like super tasty, and they're kind of, you know, on the low carb side, although not kind of carbohydrate free, but it's all dairy free, it's all gluten free, and it, I don't know, just kind of feel good after you eat it, which I think is always nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think I'm going to have to try it.
Well, I'd say good for you.
Thanks. Yeah. So let me ask you my question from my previous guest. On episode 259, I had on Gary Obligacion. He's the general manager at Post Ranch Inn in Big Sur. And he wants to know, what did you discover as a chef through COVID that maybe you didn't expect to, or that surprised you? What tapped into your own heritage being on the Indian side with Mexican food, and then that you've explored and to fully help carry you through this post-COVID era. I just made up a word. COVID? Right. I don't know what I said.
I'm with you.
Post-COVID era.
I'll tell you, you know, it really makes you look deep into your... Because, like, you know, your customers and your clientele has really been slashed by, you know, so much. You know, most restaurants are doing... I know some are doing 0% and some are doing 15%, and some of the better ones are doing 50 to 60%, but it's all at a lesser rate. You know what I mean? So I think it really forces you to look inside and say, why did you start doing this in the first place? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it really does force a true kind of introspective look on who you are, why you're doing it. And ultimately, you know, we do this because we like to take care of people, and we do it through food. You know, my partner Michael does it through, you know, more interaction, you know. And then I think the more, as I've seen kind of across the board, everyone wants more homey cooking. And I, at home, I find myself cooking a lot more Indian food during this downtime, because, you know, rice and lentils is something I honestly feel like I could eat every day and never really get tired of it. And then the Mexican side is of me, which I often find is like split right down the center, you know, just finds its way into this Indian food a lot with the chilies and makes me kind of rethink our menus at the restaurant and how we can keep them fresh. Even through this down period, you know, so we changed our shrimp taco. It's more like this salsa that we make with, you know, cumin and allspice, but then we roast the chilies and it has this real Indian korma kind of aspect to it. And we toss it with the shrimp. I don't know. It's really, really tasty and homey, and makes me want to put it on a taco or put it on rice and eat it right away. So, I guess it's just kind of forced you to look inside internally quite a lot.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you're making me hungry.
Hungry's good.
So before we take a break, let's talk a little about Hospitality HQ, because, sure. You know, I only learned of yesterday that 2 days ago you opened a food hall in Chicago.
That's true. We did. And we have... actually, five more in the pipeline right now.
I mean, that's amazing. But I mean, so you're what's it like opening now and this the idea of the food hall? I mean, I was thinking about design and everything that everyone's going through now with social distancing and you know, where were you at with opening it? Were you able to create the space that, you know, without having to like go backwards in planning, right? Or
I find this like kind of remarkable, because it's actually really counterintuitive in a way, but the more I've talked about it and now doing it, it's been very interesting, the whole process. But, you know, we were fortunate enough in Chicago to have this happen before we opened by 4 months, you know?
Yeah.
And we were fortunate that it gave us an opportunity to take a step back and examine what it was we were doing there. And ultimately, you know, the food hall is an experiential place. You know, I don't know that New York necessarily does it with the food halls here in the way that I would say I love, you know, like there are other places, but ideally it should be a great place to get great food from artisanal, you know, vendors who have, or restaurant owners who have, you know, a message or something to say that, you know, are going to be there present, accounted for, and cooking. However, we also have the space, unlike a restaurant, to spread out the floor plan in a way that restaurants and typical brick and mortars can't do. So we're toying around with 10,500 square feet inside and about 1,500 square feet outside. That actually still gives us with the diminished capacities, enough space to manage the crowd and stay open. And these vendors, a lot of them have lost businesses, as you can imagine, through this crisis. And a lot of them who had businesses that were ready to open weren't able to open them. And a lot of them were facing kind of forthcoming closures. So the food hall becomes a really good, inexpensive way for them to be able to stay working, stay afloat, still do what they love to do, and hopefully take care of the people they need to. And that's really our objective, you know, with the food hall.
Well, it's great. I mean, it's amazing that you have that in Chicago, and I think you also have one in Omaha, as you said, coming.
Yeah, we do. We have several more. Yeah, Houston soon, and Portland, Maine soon. And these are, you know, Portland, Maine is something I'm like super excited about because I just happen to really like it there. Then we have a couple of other ones coming up that are in very fun cities, you know, but they're far enough away that I think it gives us a little breathing room.
Yeah, well, that's good. Okay, we're going to take a break and then come back. We'll have my speed round. We'll have industry news, my solo dining experience, and the final question. Before we do, I have a special announcement. So Nyman Ranch is presenting a virtual event series honoring their community of independent family farmers in lieu of their 22nd annual Hog Farmer Appreciation Dinner, which couldn't take place in person this year. The series of educational events is happening now. It will continue through September 11th, and it includes panels such as a chef panel on restaurant resilience, a Nyman Ranch farmer panel, and one on the future of grocery retail. Our very own Kat Johnson of Heritage Radio moderated a panel this morning on the future of restaurants, and I tuned in. It was great, and it's going to be broadcast on HRN on tour and Heritage Radio sometime later this year. And if you want more details and to reserve your spot, please go to Nyman Ranch HFAD.com, and that stands for Hog Farmer Appreciation Dinner. So again, that's Nyman Ranch HFAD.com. And we'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Tending to You. Tending to You provides mobile bartenders and waitstaff for private events in the greater Houston area. Their dedicated and capable team specializes in traditional sit-down gatherings, past appetizer service, buffet-style meals, and bartending refreshing customized cocktails and beverages. They provide all their own tools needed for a pop-up bar, including drinkware, garnishes, napkins, and more to be set up for success. They also come equipped with trays, gloves, and cleaning products, which allows Tending to You to provide a superior level of service. Learn more at tendingtoyou.com. That's tending, the number 2, and the letter u.com.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Hector Nawab. He is the chef and owner of Alta Calidad, Otravez, and Prather's on the Alley. He's also the founding partner and CEO of Hospitality HQ and a chef of Cook Unity's Creators Club. So, Hector, what this is coming up, my speed round game, is I ask you to choose between a few choices such as chocolate or vanilla, and you get to pick your preference.
Okay,
so here we go.
Ready.
I know you're ready. I didn't even give you my sample chocolate or vanilla. I knew you just got it.
Got it. That's how much I think things through, I guess.
Okay, well, here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Eat in.
Wine, beer, cocktail, mocktail, or champagne?
Cocktail.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
a la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
Small.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Chef's corner.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
All-inclusive.
How about chia-baked salmon or lamb kebab turmeric hummus?
Chia salmon.
I was eyeing both of those.
Yeah. Well, I'm working on getting the king salmon, but right now it's chia wild salmon, but I want the chia wild king salmon soon.
Awesome. Okay, I have three more. Food halls or traditional restaurants? I finally stumped you.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That's a tough one because I'm so motivated by what we're doing. But I would say that's a tough one.
All right. I'll let you pass on that one.
I'm just so into what we're doing, but I know what we do in Brooklyn too. You know, so sometimes my restaurant heart is split down the middle on this stuff because I love seeing what these vendors are doing. It's amazing. Like whether they're making dumplings or barbecue or whatever it is, and seeing these people at their best is amazing. But I also like doing it myself in my place. So.
Well, that makes sense. Okay, my last two are cheese plate or dessert?
Cheese plate.
Manhattan or Brooklyn or New Orleans or D.C. or Chicago or Omaha or Portland, I have to throw in there now.
It's New York because it's Manhattan because my daughter's here with me.
Ah, that's nice.
Otherwise, it would be Portland, I think.
Okay, well, that's great. You did very well at this game. You were very fast.
Okay.
Even though there's no right or wrong or prize besides that you get to now talk some industry news with me.
Yeah, I'm in.
Okay, good. So I picked out an article that was in Esquire by Jeff Gordner, and the title is "The Real Reason I Miss Restaurants Has Nothing to Do with the Food." If this pandemic has taught us anything, it's that we don't go out because we're hungry. We go out because we're lonely. I have to say, I definitely agree with Jeff, even though the food, I do go out for the food. It's not, I think I've always said it's food service and ambiance. You need them all to make, you know, to really make me feel happy in that sense of it's a combination. But I get that we go out to eat beyond what's on the plate, that it's to be social and around people.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw this piece or have a take on it.
Yeah, I couldn't get through all of it, but I got through most of it. And yeah. I tend to agree. Like, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say lonely as much as it is, I guess to me lonely indicates like you're craving or in need of attention in some way. And I guess when I think about kind of this perspective, it is definitely that you want to be around others, and I agree with that. But you know, that also goes for like, I miss seeing live music, you know what I mean? Or my daughter misses going to see a movie, but you don't really go to a theater to go see it by yourself. You go because there's a group of people who are also feeling that and kind of together that energy is what kind of people need, that togetherness. And it could be working out, it could be, you know, like I used to love going to these boxing classes, and they're all canceled for who knows, 3 years, whatever it's going to be. But you know, it was a fun way for me to work out a couple of times a week, you know what I mean? So I do agree, you know, I guess to an extent that people do go do that because they're seeking to be around others, you know.
Yeah, and I agree with you because I mean, I read this and I, you know, started thinking about it more. And as someone who dines out and a lot by myself, and sure, has traveled around the world by myself, I'm comfortable being alone in doing that. Sure. But the thing is, I'm not, you're not really alone. I think that's why I go to a restaurant, because even if I'm by myself, then I'm surrounded by people. And even if I don't talk to anyone beyond the server, it's still, there's something about it that that makes you feel, or me feel, like comforted in a different way than I am if I'm eating by myself in my apartment.
Right. No, I agree. I agree with that. I get it. I do feel similarly. You know, that said, I think I've had two meals in restaurants in 4 months. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
One was in Chicago because we were there opening this place. So we all went somewhere. That could be outside, for example. And the other was for Ella's birthday in July 15th. And that's been it. And I haven't necessarily missed eating in restaurants as much as I have cooking in mind. That's been a difficult adjustment, you know. So I am cooking at home a lot, but I do miss being able to cook in that capacity where it's just there and it's what I want to do. And I mean, obviously there's home, but I am missing that for sure.
Yeah, well, I could see that too. I mean, it's different cooking in a restaurant than it is cooking at home. But we'll see. I've been dining out a bit as places are opening, but not at all like I used to. I mean, it's been few and far between. But that will be my segue into my solo dining experience this week, because I went to Mercado Little Spain. So
yeah, how was it?
So I'm gonna give it was great. I mean, I'll give a rundown of it. The location, 10 Hudson Yards, the shops at and restaurants at Hudson Yards, New York City. The concept, it's a sprawling Spanish food market with restaurants and kiosks, and it's now open for takeout, delivery, and outdoor dining. The chefs and owners are Jose Andres, Albert Adria, and Ferran Adria. So why did I go? Well, because it's Jose and the Adria brothers. I mean, that's good enough reason, of course. So my experience, this was last Friday night. I was biking around the city, which has become kind of my mode of transportation and also my new hobby. and I didn't have a plan, and I kind of spontaneously ended up there realizing they had opened up for outdoor dining. So when I got there, they had some outside seating, but I was in my gym clothes. I just kind of wanted to take something to go. They had a sign saying you could order, you could scan the menu and order. It was easiest to order online. So I just stood there. I did that. I scanned the menu. I ordered off my phone. I took a little walk. It said my food would be ready about 15 minutes. I came back. I got my bag. And then I actually started eating on these high top tables that they had set up for self-serve. So what did I get? I had the pulpo a la galega, which is their boiled Spanish octopus with mashed potatoes. And I had the bikini mixto, which is a bocadillo, a grilled ham and cheese sandwich. My take? Delicious. I mean, the octopus, which I hadn't had in months, because I just not in my diet during this pandemic, even though I used to eat a lot of octopus. So it was nice to have it. And it was bathed in these mashed potatoes. It was quite heavenly, I have to say. And the sandwich was this large grilled sandwich. And it was good to have the bread to go with it. I mean, it was a nice combo. I guess kind of a weird combo I made, but I enjoyed it. The ambiance is a quaint street on the south side of Hudson Yards. Perfect for anyone who wishes to travel to Spain to eat, but is currently in New York City. Interesting tidbit, Mercado Little Spain also has some do-it-yourself kits they're offering online. And Jose, our hero Jose, his World Central Kitchen is working across the country to safely distribute individual packaged fresh meals in communities that need support, and they're currently providing 150,000 fresh meals every day, which is just incredible.
That's amazing.
It really is. Yeah. So my personal fun fact is during the time I was waiting for my food, I walked across the street. There's a brand new Whole Foods that has opened up. So I gave myself a little tour. And let me tell you, this Whole Foods is quite amazing. It's very spacious. They had some new different counters, like a matcha bar and just the meat and the cheese. I don't know. It's like...
My friend Matcha Full, that's Hannah.
Really?
Yeah, we know each other. She's great, amazing.
Oh, that's awesome. That's on the first floor. It wasn't open then, but and then everything else is pretty much on the second floor. It was awesome. I bought a fancy water. They have self-checkout now there. I get excited about supermarkets still. So it's a great Whole Foods if you're in the neighborhood. The cost of my meal at Little Spain was $28. That's not including tax and gratuity. Would I go back? Yes, of course. Their website is littlespain.com. And also, side note, I don't think anything else is currently open in Hudson Yards. I mean, it's everything else has been enclosed in the giant mall, so it's great they have the outdoor space.
Right.
So that's my latest dining experience. Okay.
I think food's good.
Yeah, you can't go wrong there, I don't think.
No, it was good.
Cool. So my next guest is Kelly Fields. She is the chef and owner of Willa Jean in New Orleans. She's debuting her first cookbook, The Good Book of Southern Baking, a revival of biscuits, cakes, and cornbread. So Akhtar, can you please ask the question for Kelly? And I wonder, with your New Orleans presence, if you guys know each other.
So my apartment in New Orleans is above her restaurant, so I eat there more than anywhere else in New Orleans.
Wow. I figured you knew her, but I didn't know you lived upstairs.
I live upstairs. So I actually, her employee who works at the cashier typically knows exactly how I like my coffee. They're really great in there, and the food's great. I love how it feels in there. The energy's always great. And she's just so impressive, and it's always great to see her whenever we're at an event or outside the restaurant. I know she's always very busy. So I really do eat there all the time and get coffee there every day that I'm there. Unfortunately, my restaurant in New Orleans has yet to reopen as we're trying to figure out how to do so, like we were talking about earlier. That one's been hit fairly hard for us, just like so many others.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
But we're trying to figure it out, and that's okay. We're fortunately, our partners there are the same partners that she has in her building, and they're very committed to us, and we are to them. So we're hopeful we're going to figure it out. It's just taking us a little while to do so. Since I eat at the restaurant fairly regularly, I would say my question is a little less about the restaurant business and more for me to understand how she makes her pimento spread or the pimento cheese, because it is so good. It's so good. I don't know all of what's in it, but I would like to know. Maybe it's in the book.
Maybe it is. We'll have to find out.
Yeah. I'm hoping.
So I will ask her, and thank you. I wish we had more time. There's so much more we could talk about, and you're amazing. I don't know how you're doing everything you're doing, and I wish you the best in getting through this time, and just much success in the future. And I can't wait to see you and have your food again.
I can't wait to see you in person. Hopefully we'll get you a copy of the book. Good for you, and you'll cook from it, and maybe we can talk about it again soon.
Yeah, I know, and I saw Andrea Strong was your co-writer.
Andrea is amazing. We've known each other forever, and so we thought we would do this together, and she was wonderful, as you know. And she knows me so well, so it made it that much easier to write this book. And she knows I've been playing bass guitar since I was a kid, and how impactful that is for me even these days. So she was able to work all of those things in there too.
Wow, it's amazing. I can't wait to see the book. So that's great.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. My guest today has been Akhtar Nawab. He's the chef and owner of Alta Calidad, of Otravez, and of Prathers on the Alley. He's the founding partner and CEO of Hospitality HQ. He's a chef at Cook Unity's Creators Club, and he has a new book out, so you all get it. His website, he's got a bunch. He's got akhtarnawab.com, hosphq.com, eat.cookunity.com, altacalidadbk.com, and otravesnola.com. And you can follow him on social media at Chef Akhtar and at hosphq. You can follow me at Sherry Bayer, at Bayer PR, at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. My websites are BayerPublicRelations.com, SherryBayer.com, and AllintheIndustry.com. All of our shows are archived at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Thanks to my engineer today, Amanda Wang, and thanks again to Akhtar. I'm Sherry Bayer. I am not going to be back here live with you until September 9th with Kelly Fields, but for the next two shows, I'm going to be playing back my panels, the panels we had at Host Summit Plus Social, the conference I did earlier this year, and so stay tuned for that. It's going to be two episodes, one from our morning session and one from our afternoon session, and I'm excited to share it with everyone. And we're also going to be putting our videos up online, so you can stay tuned for that. So again, I'll be back on September 9th with Kelly Fields, because we have a summer break here at Heritage Radio. And till then, stay well, stay safe, and thank you for being part of All in the Industry. Bye. All in the Industry is powered by Simplecast. I'm Sherry Bayer, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, HRN is celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.